The following program is brought to you in color.
On the air everywhere, this is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Whatever.
Hey, it's the Ron Van Dam Show. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good night. Not in that order. How you doing? Looking especially good today. Did you wash your hair? Is that what it is? You wash your hair again? Makes a difference, it really does. Don't forget to clean behind your ears. Everybody forgets that. I forget I have ears sometimes. I know that I hear through them, but I never really look at them. I never stare at my ears. I've never complimented anybody on their ears before and said, man, you're beautiful and your ears are lovely. No one says that. No one, you know, say, some people say when your ears are too big, but even then it's like, you know, don't say that. Don't say that. That's going to devastate them if they hear that their ears are too big. But you don't. And what a wonderful personality that person has. They're just bubbly and exciting. And those ears, wow! I wish I could detach them and smother my face in your ears. I wish I could take your ears and just live with them forever and put them on a pedestal of ears I want from you. I just, they're ugly things. What are those things? What, I mean, I know we hear through them. We have ear holes. I call them ear holes because they're actually holes on the side of your head. And from that we can hear. And obviously if you didn't have ear holes on the side of your head, you couldn't even hear this show. And that would be devastating. So they're very important for that purpose only. But, so I get the holes in the head on the sides thing in order to hear stuff. But what are these big skin attachments? What are these bellowous elephant ear things? What are these protrusions that come out of the sides of our heads? I mean, someday just stare at yourself or stare at somebody else's ears. How about doing that? Then you don't need a mirror, which is really convenient. Just stare at their ears and go, whoa, freaky crap. Look at the skin formation on the side of the head. Thank God they're balanced and you have one on each side, because otherwise it would be like really strange. It's strange as it is. What is that? What is that lobal thing going on? What is that? What's that layering of, what is that? It looks like this bell pepper sliced in half. I mean, what the fuck is it doing on the side of your head? Why would it be there? Does it actually muffle the sound? Does it accentuate the sound? I don't think so. Because I can take my ears and like hold them to flush to the side of my head, and it doesn't change my hearing at all unless I cover up my head ear hole. Other than that, I don't know what this skin does. I don't know what it does. I know what it is. It's a place for women to put their jewelry that dangles down the side of their face. They're face dangling holders. That's all they are. They're face jewelry dangling holders. So then why do men have them? Men don't wear that kind of stuff ever. So like why do men even have earlobes? Men have a lot of stuff hanging off their body, don't they? They've got the earlobes, they've got the pinaki thing. I really can't say penis on the air, but what's that about? Now, what's all this? What's this? What is it? Women have protrusions in the front, but they're not always that, you know, well, I guess they are. All right, at this point, this juncture of the show, I start saying to myself, what the hell are you talking about? You've been on for almost 10 minutes and you said absolutely nothing except for question why people have ears. And it is a question. I'm sorry, I got nobody to ask. Who am I gonna ask? You think I'm gonna go to my doctor? You think I'm gonna go to my doctor during my physical and say, Ron, do you have any concerns? Or did you have any stomach pain? Any type of nerve pain? Any arthritis? Do you're suffering from headaches? You get dizzy? No, it's not that. It's just, what the fuck are these things on the side of my head? What are the ears for? What? And doctors actually have things in the doctor office to actually look inside your ear holes. They have those little cups. They're plastic cups. And, you know, if you're going to make me wait inside of your little waiting room, office, examining room, then you're going to expect that I'm going to start going through your stuff. That's like locking me in your bathroom and expecting I'm not going to open your medicine cabinet to see what kind of drugs you're taking, or if you've got any kind of oozing sores that you're taking medication for and putting salve on pus balls. I don't know what you're doing. So yeah, I'm going to go through your medicine cabinet if you're just going to leave me locked in your bathroom for an hour. So don't leave me in your examining room and expect that I'm just going to sit there. No, I'm going to start licking all your ear cups, and I'm going to take tongue depressors and make little rafts out of them with Elmer's glue and stuff. I'm going to do those things. And your rubber gloves, kiss them goodbye. They're coming home with me. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but it's going to be weird. I'll tell you that right now. I do have play. I hope my doctor isn't listening. If you are, I'm kidding. But if you aren't, I'm serious. I got boxes of those rubber gloves at home. It's like working in an office and not going home with toilet paper. I mean, seriously. I mean, they owe you. So yeah, I got boxes of these little latex gloves. I don't know what the hell to do with them. I don't. I'm not self-examining, and if I were, I wouldn't be wearing gloves because it would be me. So, like, what am I going to do with these gloves? They're a little too thin to use with caustic material and cleaning your kitchen. So I don't know what, but if ever someday there is a nuclear holocaust and the only way to save the world is to wear these latex gloves, I'm all set. That's all I'm saying. I'm all set. And I consider that emergency preparation. H, as a matter of fact, because I don't know what to do with these gloves. I seriously don't know. And if I sold them on eBay, people would actually probably say, it's an interesting item, but what am I supposed to do with these latex gloves? I mean, it's true. There's nothing to do with these things. They're just stupid. They're stupid, stupid gloves. Oh, man. You know, it is the winter in the New England area. I don't know where you're living. Some people don't even live in the New England area. Listen to us from California, where you have absolutely no water whatsoever. You've been having a drought, like, for, I think, 100 years. I think something like that. And when it does rain, things are so dry that the mudslides occur and your house falls into the backyard of somebody else's. So not a great place to live. But nonetheless, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm just saying that when you go to the bus stop today, kids, you better dress accordingly. That's all I'm saying.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
Well, I hope it's something that's fairly warm because, again, it is cold outside. It seems to be a running theme in the winter for some reason, but it's cold, and what you need to do is wear what I call thermal underwear. This is the most disgusting garment has ever been created by man or woman, for that matter. It is tightly internet-woven pieces of sheep that irritate your skin and are so warm and uncomfortable that you basically don't want to live anymore. And thermal underwear is meant to keep you warm. It's like wearing a tight oven mitt. And I don't know about you, but I don't like wearing tight oven mitts. I used to do it as a child, and I don't want to do it anymore. Sorry, I'm having some water every once in a while. You're supposed to drink eight glasses of water a day. At least. And if you really want to cleanse yourself, you're supposed to drink a lake, basically, a gallon of water a day. Just thinking about that makes me want to camp out in the bathroom, seriously, because I can't handle that. I can't handle that much water. My body would be like Niagara Falls internally. I'd be doing sightseeing rides and everything because there's just going to be too much water. Too much water. I'll be flooding out my neighbor's yards. If I drink a gallon of water a day, I will have no neighbors. They will be drowned and they will have to be rescued by helicopter and lifeboats because, I've never been pregnant. I never plan to be. I don't think I can be for obvious reasons, but I think it'd be worse than breaking my water. Would be drinking a gallon of water a day. I just stand back, honey, because bad things are going to happen. Anyway, so thermal underwear, it's a coating of stuff. Some of you don't even know what it is. Some of you only wear that to the 7-Eleven to pick up your smokes. So there's a fine line between the two, but it's horrible. But kids, wear your thermal underwear today because it's going to be cold outside. And you know, I love children in a theoretical sense. I believe that children should be part of society because without them, we wouldn't have any more adults and that would end society as we know it, which is not a horrible idea. Maybe we should start fresh because this one ain't working out too well. But anyway, you need the kids. You need the kids. You have the kids. You have your little Irish family of 17 children. Go for it. You have a good time. I'm done. I'm through. I went through it and happily so. Two rules about kids: shut up, don't talk unless I point to you and give you a written authorization to speak to me. That's the first point. The second point is, get off my lawn. Get off my lawn. The problem is that kids don't respect boundaries. And I'm not talking about psychological boundaries. I'm talking about get off my lawn. If you got to respect my property. If you step 1 foot on the property, which I pay very high taxes for, then I have a perfect right to chop your foot off because you do not belong on my property. So that's what I'm saying, kids. I have an invisible mental moat around my property. And if you step 1 foot into it, I own you. I can do whatever I want to you. And believe me, I'll be kind. When I say I can do whatever I want to you, it would mean prosecute you with the heaviest penalties of law. So those two things, kids, don't speak unless you're spoken to. And I want you to tweet your answers in like 14 words or less. I don't know how many words in a tweet because I don't do that stupid crap. Then B, stay off my lawn, stay off my property. I spent a lot of money to make my lawn nice and green and pleasant for everybody to see. And then you take your little childlike foot and you step on it with no regards whatsoever for the amount of money that I spent for a lot of immigrants to come over here from other countries to make my lawn look good. So I'm telling you right now, kids, respect. Respect what I tell you to do. All right, that's what kids should be wearing today, thermal underwear, without question. And now, men, again, I don't really care. You wear whatever you want. I'm not looking at you. Might be staring at your ears a little bit because they are freaky. But beyond that, I'm not looking at you at all. You wear what you want. I have no idea what you're wearing. And if you don't dress up, I look that much better. So whatever. Women, all right, here we go. That little black negligee, you know what I'm saying? Those stockings that you, put there.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
Thanks to Metro South Podcasting, now you can get your Ron Van Dam anytime you want. As much Ron Van Dam as you want, any way you like to take your Ron Van Dam. Wow, this is getting really uncomfortable for me to read. Ron, did you write this way on purpose? Did you even read this out loud to yourself to see how it sounds? Yeah, actually, you know, you probably did. Okay. It's the Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. Just go with it.
Listening to this program, by the way, carries its federal penalties. You have to understand that you have certain responsibilities as a listener of this show, as I have responsibilities not of doing this show. Here are your responsibilities. The rules and regulations is handed down by the Federal Podcasting Administration of the United States of America.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home. Some listeners may experience nausea or vomiting while listening to this show. Please consult with your doctor or psychologist before listening to this program. The Ron Van Dam Show is not intended for listeners who have had a history of high blood pressure or acid reflux. Women who are pregnant should stay at least 20 feet away from the radio speaker and should avoid listening to the show for more than 2 hours at any one time. The Ron Van Dam t-shirts should never be worn in conjunction with the Ron Van Dam pants, unless it is after Memorial Day or before Labor Day, but even then. Please refrain from loud conversation, as this may be disruptive to others nearby who are trying to listen to this program. Your enjoyment of the program may vary. It may vary greatly. Please enjoy the show.
Yeah, welcome back to the program here. Hey, how you doing? I hope that I'm keeping you company for whatever amount of time you require this company, this so-called company, to be. This is a Ron Van Dam Show. You can hear me every weekday at any time of your choice. New shows by 8, 9 o'clock in the morning usually. And that's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which we here call weekdays. Yeah, I know, we do. I know. So enjoy and have a good time. Right now we're going to speak to, every once in a while in this program, we do some interviews because I consider this show to be a lifestyle show. Ron, what, are you serious? This is a lifestyle show? It's a nothing show. You don't do anything. You've been doing this now for about, I'm talking like someone's talking at me, almost 20 minutes. You've said absolutely nothing. I know that. I'm aware. Tell me what I don't know. Okay, now to get to the serious side. Man, this show jumps all over the place. It's actually quite annoying to me now. I was speaking to a surgeon recently on the program, and I haven't aired this before. This is a conversation I had with a surgeon last week. He said, what a phenomenal guy this was. Surgeons are amazing. They do these incredible life-saving procedures. They like open up your body. In some cases, they don't even have to. They use these little injections with little cameras at the end, and they go into your body and they repair shit. I mean, they're like plumbers. They're like electricians. I mean, I don't know. I can change a light bulb, but beyond that, I don't understand how things light up. I have no idea. I just depend on other people to take care of it for me. But these surgeons, man, they go into your body and we trust them with our lives. I mean, it can be all over. If a surgeon is like had a few drinks the previous day and is a little tipsy, I mean, this is like, how much trust can you put in an entity more so than a surgeon, man, on you or a loved one? I mean, it's just crucial. So, I mean, when I talk about people of greatness who have taken their education and their knowledge and turned it around for humanity, we're talking surgeons. And not so much doctors, because, you know, oh, that sounds horrible. Here, take this pill and I'll see you in 3 weeks when I can collect more money from you. And I'm really concerned about you, Ron. And when's the last time you gave me money for an appointment? You know, no, they're wonderful people, doctors. They really are. And my God, they're fantastic. But you got to understand, a surgeon, man, surgeon is like in the trenches doing the real life stuff. Either saving our life or making it like tolerable physically. So, yeah. So I was talking to the surgeon who actually not only does surgery, but does surgery, get this, on fetuses? What, you can do surgery on fetuses and not like pop them open or something? Like, how do you do that? Aren't they fairly like tiny? And aren't they like, my God, that's a life inside of another life. I mean, so I totally, totally respect this guy. So let's take a listen to.
Well,
let's do it then. Here's this incredible surgeon that I spoke to last week. Dr. Scott Adznik is the surgeon in chief at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He joins us now. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning to you.
So, I assume that you're in Pennsylvania at this time.
I'm at my desk in my office at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Perfect, perfect. Now, we're talking about fetal surgery, and this is birth defects. How common are they, actually?
Well, this is Birth Defects Awareness Month,
yeah.
And birth defects are amazingly common. One in every 33 babies is born with a birth defect, and there are many downstream effects of this. First, birth defects are costly. Billions of dollars are required for medical treatment. They're merciless. No parent is immune. They're mysterious. Most causes of birth defects are unknown. They're overlooked, in my view. Research is underfunded. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, birth defects are deadly. They're the leading cause of infant mortality.
And now, do you actually do fetal surgery?
I actually do. I am a pediatric surgeon.
Wow.
Lived in Boston many years, Harvard College, Harvard Medical School, Massachusetts General Hospital, General Surgery, Boston Children's, so-called Preparation H.
Yeah. Okay. Alrighty then. I can't.
And we developed fetal surgery about 30 years ago at University of California, San Francisco. Yeah. And for the last 20 years, I've been at the Center for Fetal Diagnosis and Treatment at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which is the biggest fetal treatment center in the world. And we do fetal surgery for life-threatening or severely disabling birth defects diagnosed before birth, where operating before birth would make a difference.
Wow. I can't even picture in my mind how that's even possible. I mean, we're talking about a fetus.
Okay, well, we could do a little thought experiment. Okay. Right. One of the most common conditions we treat before birth is spina bifida. Okay. And spina bifida, of course, is a birth defect occurring very early in gestation in which the coverings of the spinal cord don't form, so the spinal cord is exposed. And as it turns out, the amniotic fluid surrounding the fetus is very toxic to the exposed spinal cord and nerves, leading eventually, when the baby's born, to paralysis, also hydrocephalus, and the need for a shunt tube in many cases to drain the hydrocephalus. So we can correct this in highly selected circumstances before birth. To do the thought experiment, this involves a big operation for the mother. She undergoes general anesthesia between 20 and 25 weeks gestation, where term is 40 weeks. Mm. So she's anesthetized. Through her and the placenta, the fetus is anesthetized, and the anesthesia relaxes the uterus. Mm. We then, an operation on her, a laparotomy to expose the uterus. Mm. We then open the uterus with a specially devised uterine stapling device that we invented. We expose the fetal back, and the fetus is about the size of your hand at that gestational age, and then can close, repair the spina bifida before birth to prevent any more ongoing damage to the exposed spinal cord by amniotic fluid, which is basically fetal urine. And also, this closure can reverse the cascade of events that leads to hydrocephalus brain damage, and hopefully will have the need for a shunt tube after birth.
My God. Injecting the anesthesia in the adult and then into the fetus, it's almost like, wouldn't the fetus pick up what the adult was injected with anyway? It seems like a credible balancing act.
Well, it is, and requires close monitoring. So deep general anesthesia for the mother is transmitted to the fetus. When the fetus is exposed, during the fetal surgery operation, the fetus also gets an injection intramuscularly of additional anesthetic. Mm. The fetus is monitored by echocardiography, where sterilely we can look at the fetal heart to see how the fetus is doing during the operation. Mm. And it is a careful balancing act, thinking on one hand, the fetus has everything to gain from having an operation,
yep.
whereas the mother, medically, is an innocent bystander, so she has to incur some risk right. and discomfort to help her unborn child.
Wow. And then is the child at that point delivered?
No. So once the operation is finished, the uterus is closed, her laparotomy is closed, she's given medications to keep her out of preterm labor, and if the operation is done at, say, 23 weeks gestation, our goal is for her to deliver at 37 weeks gestation, which is term.
Phenomenal.
So there's 14 more weeks. There's no immediate gratification here.
Yeah.
The baby needs to continue to develop, and hopefully this will ameliorate wow. some of the ill effects of spina bifida. Wow.
I mean, even the painkillers that the mother would have to take, I mean, just and then leaking into or affecting I don't know how that's done, but that's an incredible feat.
It's straightforward how it's done. So usually the mother is in the hospital for 4 days to
right.
recover.
Yeah.
And she's closely monitored for the rest of the pregnancy.
Yep.
She receives, before the operation, an epidural, which is very good for pain
right.
control.
Yeah.
And is you know, we have a whole protocol. We do about one of this particular operation a week, about one a week, about 50 a year.
Wow.
We also do other fetal surgery operations for life-threatening conditions, including twin-twin transfusion syndrome. Would you like to hear about that?
Yeah.
Well, this is the situation. Identical twins in two separate amniotic sacs, but one placenta. Usually each baby, each twin will have their own placenta, which is a disc hookup between the mother and the baby to provide nutrition to the baby with the umbilical cord. And in the case of twin-twin transfusion syndrome, identical twins, separate amniotic sacs, but one placenta, and there are abnormal blood vessels running from one side of that single placenta to the other, such that one twin gets too much blood and goes into heart failure.
Right.
And the other twin doesn't get enough blood and goes into kidney failure.
Yeah.
And both twins will die unless we do a fetoscopic surgery, which involves putting a scope, a tiny fetoscope, through the mother's abdominal wall, through the uterine wall, into the uterus to view the placenta. Then we can use a laser fiber to ablate or photocoagulate those abnormal crossing blood vessels, hopefully to reverse this process and to save both babies.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So we do about 2 to 3 of those a week.
Yeah. Can a disease like muscular dystrophy, is that considered a birth defect since you're born with that? It's not something that you necessarily acquire. Can those, does this fall under the category? I mean, are all birth defects perhaps available?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. We're very good at detecting anatomic birth defects by ultrasound, usually by 18 to 20 weeks gestation.
Yeah.
Also, by fetal MRI, you can do an MRI on a fetus, and we helped develop that about 15 years ago. But genetic defects can be picked up. Virtually any genetic defect can be diagnosed now. So yes, many, many things can be diagnosed, and many things now can be diagnosed with techniques beyond, say, amniocentesis. Now there's non-invasive prenatal diagnosis techniques in which maternal blood can be drawn and mother's blood can be drawn, and there are always a few fetal cells that leak across the placenta into the maternal bloodstream, and those cells can be sort of picked out like a needle in a haystack, and they can be analyzed. So that sort of screening, I think, will be very big in the future and be done on a routine basis.
Wow. So, I mean, the medical technology every day just keeps improving, and it's amazing.
And I think one day some genetic defects will be able to be treated by in utero stem cell transplantation and possibly in the future by fetal gene therapy, but neither one of those techniques is quite clinically ready for prime time. And there are many groups in Boston, as a matter of fact, who are doing research in those areas of prenatal diagnosis, for example.
Wonderful. Now, if they could only cure cancer, that would be good. But you can't do everything at once.
Of course that would be good.
Of course.
Why can't you? Yeah.
Well, because there's always this conspiracy thing, these conspiracy theories that perhaps that shouldn't be done because companies don't benefit. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that many times before.
I'll leave that line of thinking to you.
Okay, because, yeah, it's a talk show host thing more than a surgeon thing. Thank goodness thank goodness for people like yourself and for the children's hospitals worldwide and, of course, in this country. I mean, it's just they're amazing miracle facilities is what they are. I mean, I know that you do this surgically and technically, but to other people, these are miracles. Thank you so much for your time. How can we get more information?
Well, our website is fetalsurgery.chop, that's C-H-O-P, .edu. So fetalsurgery.chop.edu.
Wonderful. Pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
Great. Bye-bye.
The one we've been waiting for. Here comes a miracle. It's time to open up the door. Heart is beating fast. I can't seem to slow it down. It's too late to turn back, but it's not too late to turn. Open up the door. Why am I shivering? I can feel it fading fast. Well, for the first time I believe that I can finally
It's not tablets being delivered at the top of a mountain. It's not bushes that are burning and speak to you. It's not large bodies of water like a sea that parts in the middle, like a hairline, so that you can go walking across it with a lot of people. It's not that that is the miracle. The miracle is being able to repair people, to repair their organs, their life sources. The miracle is actually the fact that we're walking around and talking and breathing and coexisting on this planet that keeps revolving, that is green, beautiful, life-giving, all the resources it takes to enjoy a life and to exist are built within the planet with their arms and their hands outstretched saying, here is everything you need to enjoy a euphoric experience. That's the miracle. The unfortunate part of the miracle is that mankind comes along and takes this handout of nature supplying everything you need for an incredible heaven-like experience. And what do? We pollute it, degrade it, fuck with it, eat animals on it, and we pretty much take the hand out and throw it back in the face of what is there and available to us. It's a sad thing, a miracle nonetheless. Ladies and gentlemen, I am out of time, and also, like, that was almost too heavy and deep for me to handle. I'll be back with you again tomorrow, hopefully the same time. Until then, I do wish you peace.